This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
There was a time before cable, when the local anchorman reigned supreme. When people believed everything they heard on TV. This was an age when only men were allowed to read the news. And in San Diego, one anchorman was more man than the rest. His name was Ron Burgundy. He was like a god walking amongst mere mortals. He had a voice that could make a wolverine purr. And suits so fine they made Sinatra look like a hobo. In other words, Ron Burgundy was the balls.
All right, we're on. Ready, Phil. We're on in 5, 4.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing for Ron Burgundy and his news team. Go time.
Channel 4 News with 5-time Emmy Award-winning anchor, Ron Burgundy. Cham Kine, sports. Rick Tamlin, weather. And your reporter in the field, Brian Fantana.
It's Channel 4 News at 6 o'clock.
Nobody heard that. Just pretend it didn't happen.
What?
Thank you. Excellent. It is 19 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of Geektober.
Geektober!
In the year of our Lord 2010, thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not really ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us on this Monday. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Are you actually applying lipstick before doing the program?
I'm dolling up for you, Rick Emerson.
All right, thank you. Well, that's as it should be. I like to think that there's some sort of an invisible alert that just goes out to all of womankind, and not a small amount of mankind when I leave the house, that put your best face forward. Rick Emerson is approaching.
We're doing the big show here. I want to be at my best.
It's not that I don't appreciate your sense of style. I do.
I combed my hair, too.
I like...
I want to look my best for radio.
You do go on. So forth. Well, I appreciate your panache, Don Taylor. It's 503-505-6964 if you want to engage with us via the telephone. 503-505-6964. I will now engage in the great on-turning of said phone. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor, she of the newly emoliated lips, can be reached at Dawn, D-A-W-N, Dawn at rickemerson.com. You can also get at us, as the young people say, via the text box at rickemerson.com website. Coming up today, Corpse Watch. There's too much to get to already.
Yeah.
Corpse Watch, Geek Watch on the way, Clown Watch coming up. We will recap last night's episode of Mad Men, which is fantastic. We'll talk about last night's episode of Eastbound and Down, which was unbelievable. And we would talk about last night's episode of Dexter, except I think you and I both... Well, you forgot to watch it.
Yeah.
I actually... It's not even that I forgot. I mean, I have it. I had it sitting there. I actually have it. I put it on my laptop. I actually have it with me right now. It's just that I had to get to this sort of... I had to get to this kind of triage point last night because it was very late in the evening. And it's like, I had to get to bed at some point, and I had to go do the Outlook Portland taping this morning, so I had to get up earlier than normal. So it's like, I couldn't just stay up till 5 a.m. trying to get everything watched. And so, let me ask you this, out of the gate, where do you rank the following three shows in terms of importance to watch for discussing here at the show? You got your Mad Men, you got your Dexter, you got your Eastbound and Down.
I go Mad Men first, then Eastbound and Down, then Dexter is not a priority anymore after last week.
I mean, and I guess it goes without saying, since you didn't watch it last night, now, did you forget it until today? Or at some point last night, did you go, I guess I haven't watched Dexter. Well, I'll go to bed anyway.
I knew that there was something else I was supposed to be catching up on this morning, and it just wasn't there. And honestly, it wasn't until you walked in and you said, did you watch Dexter? And I was like, oh, that's what it was.
Well, I was kind of secretly hoping that you hadn't, so I was was pleased to learn. I mean, on the one hand, I guess if one of us had watched it, we could actually then be discussing it with some sort of specificity with, you know, whoever is watching it. It's not like I've just washed my hands of the show. I mean, I'll watch it. I mean, I've got it sitting on my machine. I'll watch it at some point, like maybe this afternoon. It was just last night, there was only a finite amount of time, and I realized that Mad Men was the show that I care about the most out of all three of those, and also the one that, you know, we talk about the most consistently, and a lot of people are watching it.
Plus, we're winding down to the season finale soon.
Yes,
so
we are, and it just voided it. And it felt like we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here, but I will just say this one thing about Mad Men, and then we'll do the recap later on in the hour. Last night's Mad Men felt not like a finale, but like this thing that they do on, they do this on The Wire sometimes, and they a lot of other shows have sort of, they follow the same formula, where the show ebbs and,
Ebbing and, yeah.
All right.
You say ebbs and flows.
Yeah, but it peaks and troughs in terms of intensity throughout the season. Then you get to within like two or three episodes of the finale, and they have some huge, momentous, really jarring, impactful episode. Then there will be sort of a pre-finale lull, where it's almost like they're kind of winding up for the punch, and then they'll give you the big knockout of the finale, whatever it is. So last night felt like the pre-finale, like a pre-climax almost, it's like an overture to the finale. And then, you know, I don't know whatever's going to happen next week. And how many episodes do we have until it's done?
Well, this was 11.
So is it a
13?
13 or 14.
Episode? I don't know.
So we got like two or three weeks maybe until it's finished.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll talk about Mad Men later on. We'll do a brief discussion of Eastbound and Down as well. We also have Aaron Duran's Week in Geek coming up. The Week in Geek. Again, Corpse Watch, Geek Watch, Clown Watch. In just a moment, we'll talk about our ThinkGeek.com giveaways and how we're going to be doing those. And you don't want to miss that. So that is on the way in just a second. I want to mention the Rick Emerson Show, of course, brought to you by a series of fine folks, including The Cleaning Solution. As Mr. Michael Beatty, who is the proprietor of that fine business, you can reach him at 971-533-3211. So we'll have more on that here in just a skosh. Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Monday.
A new DNA law sparks controversy over privacy. The world's first glasses-free 3D TV is going to go on sale. And a two-legged pig learns to walk.
Does it bother you when you say glasses-free? When you use glasses as though it's a singular object, does it sound grammatically incorrect to you?
A little bit, yeah.
I had this whole thing when I was doing the taping this morning at Outlook, but I tried to never blow the opening more than once. Because Cheryl taunts me, which now I've come to need in a sort of perverse way. Like I've just become dependent upon her shriek of fail from the back of the studio. But it's like then if I choke more than once, like if I screw up the opening twice, and this has never really happened, but you know, saying it now, you know, I'm guaranteeing that it will. I'm afraid that it'll then get in my head and it'll be all psyched out.
How often do you actually get it right in one take?
I would say maybe 40% of the time, 50% of the time. I'd say it's even odds, but it never really takes me more than twice.
Because I was on Outlook Portland twice, and both times...
I screw it up both times?
Yeah, both times you boffed the first go-through.
Well, the opening, if I'm going to blow something in the show, it's always the opening. That's the thing. It's the opening to that, which I should learn to just do it later. I should do it when nobody's around, as I just take as many runs at it as necessary. Anyway, but this morning I wrote the opening to Outlook Portland because it's, you know, it's sort of scripted and whatever. But I write this stuff and I have this problem where I write it and then it somehow never occurs to the rest of my brain that I'm going to have to actually read it out loud at some point. And so I will get overly flowery with the dialogue, and I'll write things that are just an unbelievable mouthful to say out loud.
Do you practice them out loud while you're writing?
Yeah, I do. But it's just, you know, but it's the thing where I always sort of... because I will write stuff the way that it, you know, the way that it occurs to me in my head, which means that I write in a very elliptical style, which is fine, except the, nobody really cares about this, but the way that the Outlook Portland set is set up, I'm just not able to, to necessarily see it, and I don't always get it done fast, you know, early enough that I can commit it to memory, because sometimes the show is still being tweaked in the day or two beforehand. So the point is that I've had to make it shorter and shorter over the, you know, the last few, plus nobody wants to hear me blather on at the beginning of a show, at the beginning of Outlook Portland, you know, just, I've had to cut it down so we can just get to the guest. So I've tried to keep it, you know, sort of more honed in. So this doesn't really happen all that often. The point is, I just got to this whole thing with singular and plural words this morning, where suddenly became hyper-conscious of it, because I was talking about a great number of people are or is. Which is it?
Is.
Okay, but you're talking about the number, right?
Right.
So it's singular, but doesn't that sound wrong?
It does.
A great number of people is convinced.
But of people is the modifier, though. The subject is a number.
Right.
A great number.
Right. But I'm saying, doesn't it sound wrong to say a great number of people is thinking that?
Right. So you usually say are, because it sounds.
It actually sounds so wrong that I actually started thinking it was wrong. That it wasn't just one of those things that sounds incorrect. That it was, in point of fact, incorrect. Here's another one. I was noting, and then I had to make a whole conversation about it this morning. I had to make a whole meal out of the thing, saying that, you know, underwear sounds like plural and it's singular. You know, you said my new underwear is, you know, is creeping up on me.
Well, underwear is either plural or singular.
Damn you, English language and your cunning trickery. All right, well, in any event, it's 503-505-6964. Before we get to anything else here, we should talk about our Geektober giveaway. So this is the Think Geek box, which is to my immediate right. We got the big crate of stuff here from thinkgeek.com. We've got the Star Trek communicator, which doubles as an internet telephony device. We have the Doctor Who 11th Doctor sonic screwdriver. We have, in fact, the USB, which is a TARDIS that is also a USB hub from Doctor Who. And then we have a $100 gift certificate to thinkgeek.com.
And we have something else to give away as well, don't we? Oh, yeah, the tricorder. Because I was going to keep the tricorder, but I've decided...
You took that home for your birthday.
No, you were going to bring it to me. You were going to take pictures of everything, and then you were going to bring it to my house for my birthday. But somewhere in between there, I thought to myself, we should really give that away, too. I shouldn't keep it. But then you didn't bring it to my house.
Well done, Don Taylor.
So it's still in the box.
It's almost like I knew your intentions ahead of time.
It's like you did.
So we have the life-size replica of the Star Trek tricorders. We've got all of that stuff that is going to be given away from ThinkGeek.com. And here's the mechanism by which we're going to do that. Because we were thinking about geeks and, you know, in October and Geektober and... What is Halloween? What does the holiday represent to people? And how is it represented in terms of iconography and the things that people do?
Because we spend this much time these things out.
You know, this sounds like we're just doing it higgledy-piggledy, you know, the helter-skelter, rat-a-tat-tat. And that's not the case, Don.
No.
So we are pleased to announce the first annual Rick Emerson Show Geek-O-Lantern Carving Contest. That is the Rick Emerson Show's first annual Geek-O-Lantern Carving Contest, which is exactly as it sounds. That is you. Yes, you. You are tasked with the following, should you choose to accept this challenge. You are to carve one geek-themed, in whatever broad way you interpret that, one geek-themed jack-o'-lantern. And you just send a photo of that to contest@rickemerson.com. Now, today, we're doing the show right now today, which is the 4th of October. So whenever you're listening to this, we're doing this on the 4th of October, and this runs through Monday the 25th. So entries must be received at contest@rickemerson.com by the end of the day, so midnight, basically, on Monday, October 25th. You send a photograph of that to contest@rickemerson.com, a jack-o'-lantern carving in the geek theme.
No. And again, the prizes are awesome and very geeky. That TARDIS USB port thing is really cool. The Doctor Who sonic screwdriver, very cool. And of course, the other two things are really awesome too. And $100 gift certificate to Think Geek.
And also the tricorder, which you actually, not that I don't want you to have it, I'm glad you brought it back, because that was actually the single, you actually did manage, through some amazing sixth sense, to pick the most expensive item in the box
did
to
I
take
really?
Home. Yes, you did. To no one's surprise. It was almost like you were... It was like you were some, you know what it was?
I have always had that as one of my mutant abilities. I can look in a store window and be standing there with somebody and people will be picking things out that they like. And I'll go, I like that one. And it'll be something very understated and not too flashy. Turns out to be the most expensive thing.
You're like a consumerist truffle hound. No
yes.
offense.
Yes.
Just able to suss out the price you set him in the box. So that is that's what
I know
we got.
Quality when I see it.
So the grand prize winner will get the $100 gift certificate to Think Geek and four runners-up. We'll get the other prizes in a means of distribution to be decided upon later. But you send your geek-themed jack-o'-lantern, your geek-themed pumpkin carving to contest@rickemerson.com. You can do that anytime, day or night, to contest@rickemerson.com. And every single one of the entries is going to go in an online gallery. So those are all going to go online to a webpage, and they'll be viewable all through the month and, you know, like forever. But we will decide the winner on Friday, October 29th. So you're going to get your entry in by the end of Monday, the 25th. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Before we get into the actual news, to the whatever, so very rarely do you and I actually see the same movies at the same time or even on the same weekend, because you actually go to screenings sometimes in advance.
Yeah.
And you can get to see a screening of The Social Network. So you saw it with The Rabble, with The Commoners.
God help me. Yes, I did. I went to the Regal Bridgeport on Sunday afternoon. And my God, because it's one of those like megaplexes with like 20 theaters or something, and there's so many people there, and the ticket machine wasn't working. Although I find that people don't really use that very often.
The little kiosk thing,
the little ATM.
Yeah. Well,
thing.
There's never anybody there.
So I went to use it, and it turned out it wasn't actually working, which is why. So I had to stand in line, and there were these guys Again, you're getting me trained to the whole way of the show, because my first thought was, I have to remember this conversation so I can tell Rick about it on
well
Monday.
Well done.
I'm in line. These two guys walk up and get in line behind me. I missed what movie they were talking about, but the first guy said, and he said it was good. It really makes you think. The second guy said, I hate movies like that. And the first guy replied, yeah, I know. I don't want movies to make me think. I want the movie to do my thinking for me. I kind of assumed they weren't going to the same movie I was going to.
You know, I honestly don't even know how to feel about that, because
I want to just turn around and go, you gentlemen are everything that is wrong with America.
I mean, it feels wrong of me to criticize them, though, because I basically have an entire house of electronic devices whose sole job is to think for me. I got a phone that's not only thinks for me, it actually dials for me. I have voice recognition software, so I no longer have to lift my arms, my T-Rex style arms, and waggle them. I actually had to type a whole paragraph on Saturday because I'd left the microphone in the other room, and I, A, didn't want to get my big Snackwell's ass out of the chair and go get the microphone. Hey, so it's like I couldn't be bothered to stand up, and so I'm like, oh, it's way in the other room. I guess I'll just sit here and type on this keyboard that's burning my legs. And so then I started to type.
You could get that scalded junk syndrome or whatever it is we talked about in the last...
That's something else altogether.
That's the last show.
So then I don't want to get up off my ass to go get the microphone in the other room. So then I have to type a whole paragraph. It was, in fact, the Outlook Portland thing, which is why, that's another reason why sometimes I end up with just a colossal mouthful of words to say at the beginning of that show, because I've been sort of dictating it lately. And you know how I do go on. And so I'm just sitting there just blathering away. And, of course, the machine, you know, usually just dutifully takes down, you know, whatever it is I'm spieling. But so now I'm having to type a whole paragraph. And I swear to God, it was like I was winded running the stairs. I got to about the second sentence, and I just had to stop for a second. I go, like, okay, metatarsal, hold on.
It would be great
if you can get through it.
It would be great if we could read like the raw footage from those. If you actually said everything that went through your mind while you were writing, you know, if we could see one of those where it's like, you know, and in this week's Outlook Portland, we have a man who's wow. I wonder if we have any more Triscuits.
Oh, my ass really itches right now. I wonder what that's all about.
I could really go for some of that spray cheese.
Is that neighbor lady mowing the lawn in short pants again?
Philo, shut up.
I like cheese. Well, you know, I made this observation myself. This is one of my, you talked about being in show mode, like, you know, prep mode where you're writing things down. Here's an observation I made Saturday night at around 10:35. I said, this is actually just me writing this down so I can make this observation out loud to everybody. Because everybody wants to hear the tiniest grains of thought that go through my head. How long until voice recognition software inadvertently captures a crime and or a celebrity sexual encounter? Because you got to figure it's like a webcam or like a security camera that, you know, that eventually captures, you know, like Google Street View or whatever, captures some guy with his junk hanging out. How long until a guy like me is running his voice recognition software and then finally has enough of that guy running the leaf blower and goes out and just bludgeons him, you know, and then the cops come in and they're, sir, do you know anything about a bludgeoning that happened? And then on the screen you just read the, you son of a bitch, this will teach you to run your leaf blower. Let me get my nine iron from the garage. And then just like, you know, thunking, squishing sounds. All right, well, in any event. So we both saw The Social Network. I have my question for you about the ticket kiosk, though.
Okay.
Because we can say this now because we're among friends. I try not to talk about this like in, you know, in mixed company. I try not to tip people off to the fact that they can just get their tickets in advance or go to the kiosk because I don't ever want there to be anybody there. I want it to be like the short line that I have access to. I hate dealing with people so much that I actually didn't even go to the kiosk this time. I actually printed the tickets out in advance at my home and carried them with me in my pocket.
That's actually a better... If you're going to use Fandango, that is actually a better thing to do.
You just walk right up to the ticket-tearing guy.
Well, and also, it's also... Those ATM things, those kiosks are not a sure thing.
Well, they were out of order at the mall, so I wonder if it was like a whole system outage thing.
Yeah, and one time when I went to use it before, I had ordered the tickets online, and I went to retrieve them from the machine, and the machine wasn't working. So I had to like go in and go to the manager's desk. And
do you have the card you used to place the
order?
Exactly,
and it was like a pain in the ass. So, you know, actually, if you're going to actually buy them in advance and save yourself time that way,
just print it out, baby.
Just print it out. And then you just carry it directly to the ticket taker guy. And it doesn't cost you any more or different. I mean, you're paying more for Fandango. You pay, what, like another $1.50 a ticket?
But here's the thing.
Like,
if I could pay $1.50 just to avoid unpleasant discussions with people like anywhere in my life, I would do it. And that's really what this is. This is not having to stand in line with slack-jawed idiots who talk about, I don't like those movies that have thoughts in them. And plus, you're not just having to talk to some gap-toothed freak behind the glass who says, like, I'm sorry, sir, this looks like is it a different card? And then you're rummaging through your 55 credit cards trying to figure out which one you use to place the goddamn ticket order to begin with.
Do you ever want to just pull people aside after a movie? I mean, I usually go to screenings, and so there's no question why these people are there. They're either critics or they're there because it's free.
Right.
You know? But when you go to movies and you're actually paying for it, sometimes I wonder what, like, their story is. Because, like, I saw this movie yesterday, The Social Network, and sitting in front of us is, like, a mom and a dad and two kids. And their kids look like, the two boys look like they're about 10,
right.
9, 10 years old. And everyone was very quiet and well-behaved, and the kids didn't ask a lot of questions, and everyone watched the movie. They seemed to enjoy it. But I kept thinking,
couldn't get a sitter.
Well, you know, the kids really enjoy the Facebook. I think they're going to love this movie about the Facebook.
Well, it's possible they're trying to expose their kids to quality cinema early on.
Yeah, I guess.
Why should everybody be like my parents and just take me to see Smokey and the Bandit 2?
It just seemed kind of... I wanted to talk to them afterwards and just find out if the kids really liked it, if they paid attention, if they really understood what it was about.
I think kids assess... kids are much sharper about that sort of thing than we think. Kids don't necessarily understand all the subtle nuance, but I think kids, even if they can't consciously articulate this, I think a kid knows the difference between, I won't even say quality and not, because that's such a relative statement. I think kids can tell a substantive work from something that is not. Kids know the difference between a cartoon and the news.
So I'm not sure what the rating was.
PG-13.
Was it? Yeah, because
there was no nudity, and there was a very, very scant profanity.
Yeah, there was a not at all graphic sex scene.
Yeah, there was a, no, it's PG-13. Because I'd wondered about that too, and I actually looked it up later to see what it was. I mentioned actually on Friday, I think, when Jack Moralia from the Halloween Bazaar was here, that the only movie my dad ever went to go see in the theater my whole time that I was a kid was Ghostbusters. The only movie my mom ever took me to see was Mr. Mom. I will say, I thought of another one over the weekend when I was saying that why should everybody be like my parents? Because I think if my parents had taken me to see like an Aaron Sorkin film or a David Fincher film, you know, or whatever the equivalent was at that time, we're going to go see The French Connection or whatever. That would have been awesome. The only movie that my parents ever took me to jointly was, I swear to God, it was at a drive-in, first of all, and it was Orca, the Killer Whale, starring Bo Derek and Richard Houston. And that's it, man. John Huston.
So I grew up watching classic films on television. My grandmother was manager of our hometown movie theater when my mom was a teenager. And so she had seen a lot of movies when she was young because she worked in the theater.
Right.
And my mom always really loved movies. And they're like, even when I was a really little kid, there was a Ross Hunter's movie mat. I can't remember what movie matinee, but it was this Los Angeles area afternoon movie show. And my mom watched it every single day while she was doing ironing and stuff. And I watched it with her from the time I was like a baby up into, you know, young childhood and stuff. And she would actually, my mother would point things out to me and say, okay, see that guy? He was in that other movie that we saw last week. And you see, that's Cesar Romero. He's actually the Joker on Batman. I was like, no, that can't be the same
awesome.
Guy. He must be an awesome actor. You know, but yeah, so I got all of my movie love from watching old movies on television.
I've actually thought about this a lot, and as much as I am not one of those guys who thinks the past is better, because that's never true, that's always a lie, I won't say it's better, but one way in which the past was certainly different is that when there were only three channels on television and there were no video stores, there was basically like, it was like Soviet era radio, where there were just two wires that came into your house. You either had communist music or you had communist news, and that was it. Those are your only choices. And like, you know, when we were growing up, you had basically three feeding tubes in your television, and it was ABC, NBC, and CBS, maybe public television.
Yeah.
And it was just
and
like,
and then a couple of local channels.
Yeah, and it's like you were just watching like whatever they shoved down the tube. That's what you consumed. I guess I'm watching, Welcome Back, Kotter. You know,
but the local stations used to show movies.
That's the
thing. You had to like get the TV guide and check the listings, and you would see when things were on, and you would mark the TV guide. And if you wanted to see something, even if it was on at like 1 o'clock in the morning, you had to make sure you were actually sitting in front of the TV.
Well, and you would watch stuff. It's like they talk about the early sort of Nickelodeons and the theaters that that existed in cities, including Portland. You know, in 1912 and 1914, where just seeing a movie was considered such a magical, fantastic experience that it didn't matter. I mean, literally, didn't matter. What is this? Well, it's a movie of a donkey kicking a fence, and it loops for an hour. All right, how much is it? A quarter? Fine, let's bring the whole and they would just sit and stare at it because it was considered so dazzling and fascinating. And that was my thing when I was a kid. It's like it was hot and cold running movies on television. And so why not? It's just, you know, it's like the glass teat is just going to give me entertainment for free. I'm taking it. And so I would just sit there. I mentioned watching Little Big Man when I was about 10 or 11 years old. Here's another movie that I watched when I was like 10. It was A Sterile Cuckoo with Liza Minnelli.
Oh, Lord.
Which I remember really loving in a totally manly way. And I there's no reason, I'm not saying it's inappropriate, but there's no reason a 10-year-old kid should be watching A Sterile Cuckoo.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell was I even, you know, it's just not made for me. And yet it was all that was on, so I watched it, and in a weird way, it probably ramped up my appreciation of film.
Yeah, I had an uncle, a dirtbag uncle, who didn't have a TV, and he would come over on the weekends to watch the Monster Chiller Horror Theater, whatever it was called, the Monster Movie Matinee on the weekend. And my mom would just park me with him to watch the horror movies because my mother thought, okay, this is like an hour and a half, 2 hours that she doesn't have to deal with me.
Right.
And also, my mother always seemed to have this belief that if it's on TV, it's got to be okay for kids.
Sure.
Because they wouldn't have put it on TV otherwise.
They wouldn't put it there, Don. Did you ever watch the final question, and then we should talk about The Social Network a bit, because I'm assuming it's the number one movie at the box office. Drudge Caddley noted that it was number one on the left and right coasts, but that, you know, the middle of America, you know, didn't care about it, because they don't have Facebook, like in Kansas, and they don't watch films.
They don't like to think.
My final question to you is, did you have, wherever it is, because you grew up in Southern California, did you have like the local movie host guys who, you know, showed you like a Goulardi or a Vampira type character who showed you horror movies or movies of whatever kind?
There was a late night guy, and I can't remember his name at the moment, but yeah, the Chiller Theater. I don't remember the host for Chiller. I think there was a host for it, but I don't remember who that was. I do remember getting up at night and sneaking out to turn the TV on and keep the sound down really low because I wasn't supposed to be up and I wasn't allowed to watch it. And there was some kind of it was Los Angeles. So, before my time, they'd had That's Where Vampira Came From.
Right.
And I can't remember the guy's name, but there was a guy.
And I never had, growing up in Kennewick, we know it was not a big enough town to ever have our own host. And I always lamented that we did not have our own local B-horror host. What we did have is we had the USA Network. And the USA Network, and I was just talking to Jack Morali about this, we had Commander USA.
Yeah.
Commander USA, who would show movies on the Super Telepsychotronic screen.
And then there was Rhonda, what's her name?
Rhonda Shear.
Rhonda Shear
host of
Up All Night. Yeah.
Yes, and she split that time with?
Was it Gilbert Gottfried?
Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah.
She was the host on Friday, Gilbert Gottfried was the host on Saturday. And Up All Night was just a marathon of terrible B-movies, many of them made by Troma.
It was great, though.
I've still got somewhere at home. It's not even all that hot. I just have it because I love her. I have the Playboy magazine at home that has her pictorial. And she has, can I just tell you this? There is the hottest photo of Rhonda Shear, who, she's a cute girl in a sort of 80s kind of way. I mean, she's not like a 10. She's not unattractive. There's nothing especially interesting about her, about the way she looks. But this pictorial of Rhonda Shear, this is the last time I'll do this today, because it becomes incredibly irritating after the second time. The host of All Night on USA. Because that's how she said it, and so that's how it occurs in my head. She did this layout in Playboy magazine, and I swear to God, the hottest photo I have ever seen in Playboy, maybe the hottest photo I've ever seen, because every guy has a list in his head of, like, the three hottest Playboy photos he's ever seen, is where she is dressed, I swear to God, as, like, a truck stop waitress. And I don't mean to sound sleazy, but there's just no way to do it. She's just standing. She's standing out by, like, the stools in front of the counter, like where you get them malted. And she's leaning against. She's dressed as a truck stop waitress. She's leaning against one of the sort of round top stools with her hands behind her, leaning back against the counter. And then she's just got her shirt pulled up. And it's like the hottest thing I've ever seen.
I saw her a few months ago. She's selling something. I can't remember what it was, on, like, QVC or something. And she still looks really good.
I dig her.
And I was watching it, and Patrick was out, and I was like, holy crap, I think that's Rhonda Shear. And Patrick, like, practically injured himself sprinting in from the other room and did that kind of Homer Simpson's, like, Rhonda Shear.
Guys, love, like, Rhonda Shear. Rhonda Shear and Lynn Russell from CNN Headline News.
And L.A., I just looked it up, and remember, the host in Los Angeles was Larry Vincent, and he did a show called Fright Night, and, no, that's the, that was the TV series, never mind.
Well, in any event. Nah, we'll have to look it up later. You can't obsess about it. If you obsess about it now, it's going to derail you. Because I know, because your brain works the...
Seymour, I swear, that did a thing on TV.
Here's the thing. Your brain works the way mine does.
It won't let go.
It's like, you know what it is? It's like a tongue probing a space where a tooth used to be, isn't it, Dawn? All right.
Yes.
You have to do it with the greatest amount of willpower. You have to put it... Somebody will find the answer and they'll tell you.
It'll be gone.
What did you think of The Social Network?
I really loved it. I really, really enjoyed it. And it's... Again, I really like David Fincher when he's good.
Yeah.
But it's really all the credit for that movie has to go to Sorkin, because it is a consistently fascinating, never boring movie that is really just guys talking to each other.
That's the
thing.
It's
nothing but people talking at each other.
It's hard to do that. I mean, it really is hard to make a movie, even though in the 90s everybody was making this movie of just dudes sitting around talking. And it was usually bad, because as easy as that sounds, I guess it is easy, but it's not easy to do it well. And Sorkin has the gift of banter, and it's about things that would not normally be interesting. I mean, I noted on The West Wing, it was 7 years, you know, four with Sorkin anyway, of people having policy discussions, which they couldn't pay me to watch that on C-SPAN.
And this is people talking about coding and financing and whether or not they...
Stock arrangements.
Yeah, stock arrangements. But it's consistently, you know, interesting and even suspenseful to a degree. And Jesse Eisenberg is great.
He's great. After Zombieland, which I honestly didn't care for all that much. I mean, I was sort of indifferent to Zombieland. It was okay. I didn't like it nearly as much as everybody else did. I didn't know what to make of that guy, because I like a lot of people. I went, well, he's sort of a Michael Cera light. But man, he really brings it. He really is great.
Because he plays Zuckerberg as a guy who's a real dick.
Yeah.
But a dick mainly because of he's got just incredibly poor social skills.
Did you get like an Asperger?
Yeah.
Autism kind of vibe off that guy?
Particularly towards the end there, during when you're watching him in the depositions, and he's just picking up his laptop and just coding.
Right.
He's just coding, even though, you know, he should be paying attention to other things. But it's like, you know, It was interesting. It was one of the best movies I've seen this year, and Man, I love that guy who played the Winklevoss twins.
Oh, yeah. His name is, it's one of those things that I knew until you asked me. Now it's gone now. I knew it earlier.
Yeah, besides being like very handsome and all, it's like there's a lot of actors in Hollywood who are good looking guys. He's just really good, really personable, and really gives off an enormous amount of intelligence.
And actually did the whole thing, you know, the obvious thing where he's got to be two different people because it's twins.
Yeah.
And he has a little bit of a Brendan Fraser thing kind of going on, too, which I know some people in this room particularly fancy.
Some people do.
But although I hear Brendan Fraser prefers Asian men, Don. Anyway.
Don't you say anything about my Brendan Fraser.
But you know, and what's his name? Andrew Garfield, the guy who played Eduardo Saverin. Now, he's the new Spider-Man, right?
Yeah, I'm assuming he's not that swarthy in real life.
But I don't know where he comes from. But I heard him saying he's British, yeah. But I think he may have, like, Indian ancestry or whatever. But he was really good. Yeah. Because in the book, in The Accident of Billionaire, Saverin is just sort of a blank. And doesn't come off as that simple. Pathetic. He comes off as kind of a whiner, actually, kind of a petulant child in Medrester's book. But he really gives that character a lot of humanity and a lot of empathy. How great was Justin Timberlake?
Justin Timberlake, terrific.
He was really good.
Playing a guy who is
kind of an
douche.
Ass. Yeah, he's yeah. just kind of a jagoff.
Charming douche.
You know what I did not realize is Sean Parker also was the guy behind Chat Roulette. I mean,
oh,
he's basically had a hand in, like, everything you've ever done on the internet. Anything that a friend has ever gone, have you seen this new program online? Like, that's apparently been Sean Parker. It's weird how they've just sort of written Sean Fanning out of the history of Napster. He's kind of the invisible man now. So somebody, the invisible hand of PR has been at work there. My final thing about this is, and I have the audio, but we'll have to play it later. I don't really have time for it. Did you see the Timberlake-Jimmy Fallon thing? From Fallon's show
I guess
it was from Friday when they did the history of rap.
Yeah.
It was really awesome. And that's the thing where, again, my standards are set so low. That it's like when I hear that Justin Timberlake, and especially like Jimmy Fallon, who seems like a nice guy, but who doesn't seem... You know what Jimmy Fallon is? Jimmy Fallon, to me, he is to late night hosting as Ben Affleck is to acting. Where he's sort of, you know, he's like a big glass of warm water.
Yeah.
He's an okay guy, yeah, I guess. He's not that funny. Are you still looking up the Los Angeles thing?
No, I had a news thing, and I looked something up, and I lost the news thing, and it was an update on something, and I...
Not that I wouldn't understand your obsessive nature.
I wanted to make sure that it was on screen, and I was prepared for when we went back to the news.
So if you haven't seen Social Network, you really ought to see it. It's quite fantastic, and the thing is, it's a Fincher film that doesn't necessarily look like a standard Fincher film. Like, he doesn't do a lot of swooping, dazzling camera work, and there's not a lot of bunch of weird editing. But it is a movie that moves. Like, I told Lara afterward that watching that movie is like watching that live stream on Facebook, where there's like 1,000 updates going by at every single moment of the day.
There is that one space in the middle where all of a sudden there's just this. Music playing and guys rowing.
It's in the Hall of the Mountain King.
Yeah, and really cool that shallow focus thing that hyper focuses one thing and everything else is kind of blurry around it, makes everything look like you're looking at miniatures or something. It's all very artsy, and it's also completely in a different tone than everything else in the movie. And the film critic Vern, if you've ever read anything.
I love Vern.
Yeah, Vern
on Ain't It Cool.
Made some mention about that, saying it was like David Fincher just basically stepping up and going, okay, let's take a break from everybody yapping for a few minutes.
I'm not going to be starting on Vern. I could talk about that guy forever. All right, well, in any event, you're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program, brought to you by, among other folks, Castalia Language Center. They are one of our proud business partners, Clara Grebel, who is the owner and operator of Castalia Language Center. She is a native Spanish speaker from Argentina, and she is now in Portland. You can find out more about Castalia Language Center at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com, that is where they limit class sizes to 8 people, means that you're going to get near... See, every time you say Ocho, I just think of porn, because of that Ocho Cinco story, where the Wheaties box and the number, and it's circuitous, but my brain gets there. It takes like 12 steps to get to porn, but I do it.
Now the word Ocho is always going to mean porn to you because of Chad Ochocinco.
Don't you think it is? That is not beyond me, Don. I can Nothing is beyond my ken when it comes to the finer shades of erotica. So they hold class sizes to 8 people, I say, immediately trying to distract from the fact that I just talked about porn again for no readily apparent reason. And, adults only, which means... Shouldn't have said adults only right there, because then we're right back to porn. The point is that adults just learn differently than anybody else. And so if you are, if you don't want to get in a class and be shown up by some 9-year-old who masters the entire language before lunch, and you're still trying to figure out how you say where the, ask where the baño is, what you ought to do is you ought to go to PortlandSpanish.com and you ought to contact Castellia Language Center. That's what you ought to do. And please tell them you heard it here. And say it was between me saying baño, like it was, like I was, like a baño is some sort of that's like a swarthy southern musical instrument. That's where you play dueling baños. And so forth. Castellia Language Center, the proud and tolerant business partners, right here at the Rick Emerson Show. This, however, is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our corpse
watch. Don't you mock me!
I'm not mocking you. I was laughing because the part of my brain that is like 9 years old was thinking about you talking about porn, then saying masters, and then saying baño.
After saying adults only.
Yeah, then saying something about kids and the bathroom. And I was like, just going, no, please stop.
Just digging with both hands when I'm doing that. Here's your corpse watch from Monday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Assuming things that's better left alone. But I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Here is Dawn Taylor with your corpse watch.
A couple from Staten Island has filed a lawsuit against the city of New York after finding out that their dead son's brain had been taken from his body, placed in a jar, and put on public display for years. Young Jesse Shipley was just 17 when he died in a car crash in 2005. Andre and Carisha Shipley might have never found out what happened to a part of their son's remains had not some of their son's classmates at Port Richmond High School visited the morgue on a field trip. There in the morgue, while on tour of the facility, kids who were members of a forensic science club and now in their 20s came across a jar with a brain floating inside and their dead friend's name on the label. The Shipleys, horrified at what they heard, said they had no idea their son's brain was removed during an autopsy after the accident had killed him. The kids who saw the jar reportedly were shaking and upset. One 22-year-old in the student group, Samantha Feldman, told a local newspaper that the group of kids on the tour were the late Jesse Shipley's girlfriend and her best friend. She said Shipley's girlfriend, after seeing the brain in the jar, went outside and was, quote, flipping out.
Yeah, I can imagine that's the sort of thing that would it would catch you unawares, as they say.
After the tour incident, the city returned the brain to the young boy's family, which then disinterred their son from a cemetery and reburied him with the missing organ. A doctor at the Richmond County Mortuary said in a court document that the Shipley boy's brain had been kept along with others for additional tests related to the autopsy, which he described as a routine procedure to avoid having a specialist make repeated treks out to Staten Island for non-urgent tests. The procedure was to save up remains until they had 6 brains, and then it was worth the trip for the specialist to make it to Staten Island.
Well, because otherwise it's a waste of gas, Dawn. I mean, really, you just these are trying times. We got to pinch pennies where we can.
So you want to come out? How many brains you got? Well, we only got 5. Well, call me when you got another brain.
Just sitting around, just waiting for the squeal of tires and the shriek of an ambulance. Rather than having my brain preserved, you know what I'd like? And on display, like, on the top of a pedestal or in a jar or whatever in a museum, I just want to have my eyes preserved and just staring out from a display case somewhere, with, like, maybe just my eyes and, like, one arched eyebrow, just sort of looking out judgmentally from a glass case of some kind. Or, how about this? If I were a man of means, if I had some amount of, financial wherewithal, I could actually pay somebody to, like, preserve my eyes and then just sort of randomly leave them in people's drawers, like your sock drawer. Mm. It's like a gag,
Yeah.
Be sort of like a whoopee cushion or like a fake spider, but it would just be like Rick Emerson's eyes. They just sort of like you open up, to get a pair of socks or something, and just looking up from the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. There's your corpse watch for Monday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
I'm digging up home.
Now I've ruined the surprise. You won't be shocked at all when that happens.
No. That Rick. Bruce Agler wants me to remind you that your former announcer, Roberta Solomon, was the local Fright Night host in Kansas City.
I did not know that. So if you KOTK listeners will remember that we had two voices. We had a guy named Casey Christopher Keating. Christopher Keating. Keating. Casey Keating, who was the male voice. God, radio names are so difficult to keep track of. Casey Keating, who was the male voice, and then Roberta Solomon, yeah, who was the female voice, KOTK, and he had mentioned that actually at one point that she was the, which is, you know, it's a dying art. Although actually, Jack Moralia, who we've mentioned several times, he was here for the Halloween Bazaar. He actually does that. There's like he does a local version of that. It's like the Uncle Eerie Shivers show or something, which is, you know, which is sort of awesome. Yes. It's a hallowed American tradition, is what it is. All right. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Let's do one more here, and then we'll have the Week in Geek with Mr. Aaron Duran. Still to come, Geek Watch, Clown Watch, and our Mad Men recap, and a little bit about Eastbound and Down as well.
A pig who can walk on two legs has become a local celebrity in China. The 10-month-old porker is known by villagers as Zhu Zhengkang, strong-willed pig, after it was born with only two front legs and learned to balance on them well enough to walk. According to its owner, Wang Zhihai, it was one of nine piglets born in a litter in January. He said, "My wife asked me to dump it, but I refused as it's a life. I thought I should give it a chance to survive, and unexpectedly, it survived healthy." Several days after its birth, Wang decided to train the two-legged piglet to walk by lifting up its tail. He said, "I trained her for a while each day. After 30 days, she could now walk upside down quite well." Wang said since the birth of the pig, which currently weighs 110 pounds, his home has been besieged by visitors.
All right, photos or it didn't happen.
I have photos. I'm going to put the photos up. I've got photos right here I can show you in a moment, and I'm going to put them on the page.
Will they be at rickemerson.com/pictures?
They will indeed.
Fantastic.
A circus even bought it for to buy the pig for a large sum of money, but Wang refused to sell. He said, "She proved to us that no matter what form life is, it should continue to live on. I won't sell it no matter how much the offer is." So there's the pig. I'm going to post those the website, or you can.
I will activate that album right now. So if you go to Visual Aids for October 4th, 2010, that is, if you're listening to this in the future, it is Visual Aids for October 4th, 2010. So you can see all of those. So I'm looking right here. Now, I'm not saying these photos are fake. They're presumably not.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand. I don't even understand how this is possible. I mean, because if you're looking at this second photo, like the first photo, the pig is basically just doing a handstand.
Yeah.
I realize this sounds like a surreal conversation, but I mean, I can get how that works. The second photo, though, I don't even know how the pig is standing. If you're not able to look at this photo, imagine if you'd taken a pig and then just photoshopped out its back legs.
Yeah, but look, it's like its front legs at this point are pretty much centered where its body is. So it's basically distributing the weight completely fully forward and backwards.
I guess. And I guess it is sort of leaning a little bit. So maybe inequality.
And he probably doesn't stand on them all the time. He probably rests the rear portion down on the ground a lot. It's only when he has to, like, get up and move, he has to walk on them.
So the pig is
standing up all the time.
So the pig is basically like he's basically like me, where if I absolutely have to get out of the chair at home to get something, like
right.
If there's a fire. But otherwise, it's a lot of just sitting around becoming larger. All right, so, and it's cunningly captioned, "A pig which can walk on two legs." So you can see that at rickemerson.com/.
Oh, have you already done it, or am I doing it?
It's.
You what? Already did it? You already put them up?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's rickemerson.com/pictures. Well, they're there. I just made them visible. They were not visible before. So,
okay.
I just logged in and they were already there. There you go. So that is a pig which can walk on two legs. You can see that right now at rickemerson.com/pictures. By the way, there's a whole series of photographs here, some of which we will get to and some of which we won't, but it's the visual aids. You can see if you go to rickemerson.com/pictures, there is in fact a photograph of the spider outside my home now with a quarter inserted into the shot for a sense of scale. The hand belongs to my wife, as does the actual courage involved. Jen, Aaron's wife, was over my house, and they sent me a photograph where they said they were tired of me being such a whining pussy about it. And so they just actually took a photograph of the spider themselves. So Jen took the photo, and my wife actually held a quarter right near the spider. And I'm amazed the spider didn't just snatch the thing away from her, but you can actually see it right now. The spider's just freaking terrifying. I mean, it's just unnerving at every level. There's also, by the way, and this is a phrase that I'm going to use, confident that it will not be topped, there is the best matador goring photo you're ever going to see. If you ever really want to just see a guy getting what's coming to him, You go to rickemerson.com/pictures, look at today's visual aids, and look at the Matador photo just captioned, "Holy God." This is our friend Todd who sent this to me. Here's what happens if you jab at an animal with a sword long enough. Have you seen the photo in question?
No.
You got to go look at it right now. I got to get your on-air reaction to this. Okay. Then we'll take a break. We'll have Week in Geek coming up here in just a few moments later on. A recap of Mad Men. We got the Clown Watch on the way, Geek Watch on the way. But if you go to rickemerson.com/pictures and go to the visual aids section for October 4th, you're going to see it's to say you can't miss it, but I guess that's sort of obvious.
I'm typing slowly. Hold on. I did it wrong the first time, and I had to type. Da, 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 okay. Hold on.
I'm only letting... I mean, the only reason I'm elongating the silence is so it'll, you know, is to really bring into stark relief your reaction.
Okay. And here we go. Opening up. And now I'm looking at...
You'll know it when you see it. It's a matador and a bull. I mean, you'll really... There's no missing it.
Well, which gallery is it in?
It's today. It's the today is October 4th.
I don't see that.
This is far less interesting than I anticipated it being.
Sorry, I had to find the right thing to.
Okay, there's no need to be testy about
it. Oh,
that's what I'm saying, right there.
Oh my God!
See, that's what happens.
Oh,
the whole you'll mess with the bull, you'll get the horns. Not so much horns as it is single horn. And in a spectacularly unpleasant fashion. Unless you're me, in which case it's wonderful. I won't even spoil the surprise for you, the twist ending to this Matador photo. So just go check that out. It's rickemerson.com/pictures, and those are the visual aids for today. Well, let's actually do one more right here, and then we'll roll today's Week in Geek. Coming up later on, our Mad Men recap, among other things.
Well, since we've already sent people to the photos, I will share that there's one photo there that you will see for Tammy Sue Whitehead. She's a Junction City, Oregon woman who was arrested in West Union, Iowa, for failure to comply with the Iowa Sex Offender Registry. Fayette County Sheriff's Office received a tip from a citizen and found Tammy Sue Benson Whitehead, 48, to be staying in a home in West Union. Benson Whitehead is listed as a sex offender for two counts of second-degree sexual abuse in 2003. She was taken to the Fayette County Jail, where she will appear before a magistrate. I looked and looked and looked, and I could not find a story from the past that explained, you know, what she
I was wondering
actually did that was second-degree sexual abuse. Mainly, it's mostly interesting for the photo, the mugshot, which is...
And I have averted my eyes from this largely because I came in... Here's the way this unfolded today. So I came into the studio... And you actually just said, she said, well, I've got a photo to just show you. I've got a picture that'll make your morning. And that's a bold statement. And so I said, well, you know, well, I've seen a lot of photos. You haven't seen this matador thing, Don.
Well, you had said, are you having a good day? And I said, yeah. And I said, yes, partly because I just saw the best picture ever.
And so here's the thing about this. And so you can see this. This is also in today's visual aids gallery. It's the visual aids for October 4th at rickemerson.com/pictures. I mean,
you're speechless.
I don't even know. I mean, what do we know about Tammy? And I was going to do my whole Tammy Sue Whitehead, you get off that Cub Scout. Except I'm unsure about whether it would be a Cub Scout or whether it would be like a Firefly. I don't.
And it's Tammy Sue Whitehead -Benson, which makes you. Does that mean she's married?
Well, but is it in fact a woman? Is this a transsexual, a transvestite? Is this a gender mixed? I mean, here's the thing.
It could be a woman with a very thick mustache.
It doesn't matter what gender you're into or what your sexual preference is. This is a horrible person. This is an awful-looking person.
I mean,
by any yardstick. It doesn't matter what your sexual proclivities might be. You don't want to have sex with Tammy Sue Whitehead. I can say that, like, definitively.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a statement of fact, regardless of what your own leanings might be. Doesn't Tammy Sue Whitehead look like she smells awful?
I
imagine just getting close enough to take a big deep like inhale of Ode to Tammy.
I'm just confused by everything.
You know, there's
photo.
A lot of bearded and mustachioed women in Portland, so it's not like it's a thing. It's not that I haven't seen before, Don.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like every time I go to Safeway, there's some scraggly-chinned woman who's checking me out there. I don't mean checking me out, although maybe I do mean checking me out. But it's like ringing up my purse, and I look up, and I try to be. It's a point of pride with me that I try not to gawk at freaks. And so when I look up, and there is, I swear to God, no
lie.
It's
a good policy in Portland, by the way, because
Well, because then you got some, then you're a jerk.
And you would never stop.
And,
never stop looking.
Looking up, and there's, I swear to God, like an actual real-life bearded lady, like ringing up my, my prunes or whatever it is I'm buying. And it's like you have to just say to yourself, okay, you're going to make eye contact for like a second and a half, just as you would with a normal non-bearded lady. Then you'll get your credit card, and then you'll leave. But you do wonder why Portland has a disproportionate number of them. But
there's a woman who is one of the administrators over at our local community radio station.
At KBOO.
Yeah, okay, KBOO. And she's the nicest woman. She is so great. She's really, really nice. But she has got, like, a full beard and mustache. And it has caused me, I've never really talked to her about it, but it caused me so much just thought in my own head about, like, it brings up so much when you're thinking about, caving to societal expectations, whether or not as a woman you're really required to,
shave your beard,
to do things. Yeah. To basically.
The answer is yes.
Change yourself to conform to, what other people want to see. But at the same time, I'm a firm believer in, the social contract, that you live in a society and therefore, unfortunately, it's understood that if you're going to go out in public, you're going to deal with other people. If you don't look a certain way, people are going to treat you like you're some kind of a freak. And do you want to deal with that? And if you don't want to deal with it, then you need to change things. And so it's like all of this crap would always go through my head when I would see her, because it's like, I never knew how to feel about it. And I realized it's not up to me to have any opinion on it one way or the other. It's her life. It's not mine. I don't care. But all this stuff would go through my head about, the whole nature of conforming to societal expectations.
You think about things way too much. I know I sound like the guy in front of you at the movie, but I mean, really, honestly, if you're a woman with a beard, you got to shave it. There's not even any quibbling about that.
But actually, no, you really don't. You just have to be able to
deal with
people staring at you.
I know that you're like nobody's coming to your house with a gun and making you do it. But I'm saying, really, there's no argument for not shaving it unless you're just deliberately trying, unless you're just deliberately trying to sort of be contrary. Which
is
fine.
There is that.
And in Portland, there's a lot of people who do that. I'm supposed to do it, so I'm not gonna. And it makes me interesting. Here's the thing. Having the beard that you have to shave, that makes you contrary enough. Like, you don't need to impress me with how you're not going to be held down by societies, like, whatever. That's like just deciding, that you're just going to walk around and just, wave your junk around, everywhere, despite anybody wanting to see it or not.
Well, no, it's not the same
thing at all. It's entirely
like
that.
No, it's not.
That is a social norm that has no rational explanation for it.
But at the same time, though, I have to say that I really admire, on a certain level, people that are able to accept themselves and love themselves and take that step, that they're a lot stronger than I am, because I have always been like hyper concerned my entire life about what other people think about me and of trying to fit in. I grew up in an environment where there was a very high priority on popularity and fitting in. And so I'm I had to spend most of my life getting over most of that. And then I see people who I think are much, much braver than I am.
Oh, you see, here's why this makes no sense. Because you were the one who was actually said to me, you've told this story numerous times, I think once in Outlook Portland, maybe between segments, and here, about how when you first came to Portland, you were sort of, you said that you were surprised and a little, what was the word? You didn't say irritated. You said you were surprised and perplexed by the fact that people here in the manner of dress seem to really go out of their way to try to look as like unattractive as possible.
Well, yeah.
And you said, I can't fathom why people would want to leave the house looking ugly. And then you said it with a sort of, like that would never fly in Los Angeles, with a little bit of Tim Riley inflection to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you can either bust on people, for that, or you can be proud of the bearded woman. You can't really do both, because then you got to be proud of the guy who like leaves the house wearing the wrong pants.
I don't know if it's a busting on. I mean, I really don't understand it. But part of it, that's me.
But it was snark, though. It was a snarky thing when you said that. You said this thing in Portland where it's like, if you're a woman, you've got to look like a lumberjack. I don't get that. Like, that's snarkiness. And there's no difference between that and the bearded lady, except that, like, we're supposed to say, like, Godspeed to you, woman with a beard. Beard and pants are the same thing. You could have it on, you could have it off. Doesn't make you special. So.
Well, at any rate, just to wrap up, no matter how you feel about this particular issue, Tammy Sue Whitehead is one unattractive human being.
Basically, as somebody here says in the next book said, right or wrong, there's no arguing. She has to take the sex. Yeah. Nobody's giving sex to Tammy Sue Whitehead. There you go. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. We got the Week in Geek coming up here in just a moment with Mr. Aaron Duran. Later on, we have Geek Watch, also Clown Watch, and we'll do the Mad Men recap from last night as well. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program right here on the Emerson News Network. Stay right there.
It's Geektober, all month long. This is the Emerson News Network.
Greetings, programs. This is Aaron Duran of GeekInTheCity.com, and this is your Week in Geek. First, something completely crap. Just turned into Porky Pig. Anyway, just go check out bayoffire.com. It allows you to give any photo of that awesome Michael Bay treatment with explosions and guns and bombs and sweet, sweet Shia LaBeouf. Seriously, Surplifers!
Come on!
Next, this weekend marks the beginning of the 2010 Portland Open Studios. On October 9th and 10th, Portland Open Studios helps you experience art as it's made in the artist's space. Watch over 100 artists sculpt, draw, print, carve, sew, and more. A fully interactive experience, you can ask about their tools and techniques. Find out more at PortlandOpenStudios.com.
Come on!
Finally, everyone this weekend in Portland and the world over should hoist a Mickey's Wide Mouth as our own Sarah X. Dillon leaves her youth behind and enters the world of her 30s. A decade older, maybe a year wiser, age comes to us all. Let us mourn the passing of innocence with dignity and booze. I'm Aaron Duran of GeekInTheCity.com, and that was your surpliferous...
Oh, come on!
Week in Geek.
Dad is smoking crack. Teacher's on your back, mom is driving you crazy. You got yourself a job you don't exactly love. It's not enough cash you're making. Just hanging around, not much going on. Saturday night and it's raining. Friends are out of town, the bars are closing down. Sunday's gonna be lazy. You wanna step out of it now? Every day, staring at the rain, Rambo on your TV. Whole pizza in the fridge, your pants no longer fit. Is that your dog there peeing? Friday night's alone, you're gonna see a show. I bet you hippie Tom playing. The only thing you know, you don't like this hellhole. Do you really wanna keep on waiting? You wanna step out of it now? If you only knew how. Hey, I got a great plan. We're driving my van. We're heading down south where summer's still around. Feel the ocean breeze. We will dance all night. Hey, we'll go to Mexico for tequila rivers flow. Where the surf is up, everybody's going nuts. Live a wild. You will feel alright.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Thank you for joining us. Coming up here in just a bit, we have Geek Watch for Monday. We have your Clown Watch coming up as well. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's Monday, October 4th, 2010, which means that last night was Sunday, which means it is time for our Mad Men recap. I will say that we are now... So we're I think we determined it was either two or three episodes from the end of the season.
Yeah.
Depending on whether it's 13 or 14.
Yeah.
So last night was Mad Men Season 4, Episode 11. I feel like we just keep saying the thing every week of like it's the best episode yet of the best season ever and whatever. But as much as I did like that episode where it all took place in one day in the office and it was just Don and Peggy sort of, you know, all being there together and, you know, and I forget, I think that was actually the same episode where Roger and Joan got mugged and then they like were humping it out in an alley, which I think for me at least was the high water mark of the season so far. I think last night was actually better. And last night was really just an astonishingly good episode.
I don't know if it was better as far as just like the storytelling or anything like that, but it was, it felt really good to me on an emotional level in a couple of ways. I mean, it's nice to see Don starting to come out the other side, you know, of his change that he's been going through. However that's going to shake out, because he's still juggling a couple of women. But it was nice to see Peggy have non-icky sex with someone, and Peggy is turning into just like this really awesome person, which is kind of great to see. It's also interesting to watch. I've loved watching the evolution of her hair and her clothes.
Yeah, me too.
Over the show, as she's gone from being
frumpy
and uptight to being like really, really tightly wound, to now they're actually allowing her to like soften and be a little bit, you know, a little bit more relaxed. It's nice to see.
Well, it's good because, yeah, the growth of the character. Because there was that whole weird... There was that whole weird thing where she was... Was the thing when she was all overweight, was that because of the pregnancy, or was that, like, separate from the pregnancy? Was that thing where they had her, like, the strange fat suit for a while?
Yeah, that was definitely a decision they made, because obviously they had decided from the beginning that they were going to have her go through some kind of a transformation.
But was that because she was pregnant, or was that... No. That was just because?
No, she was in a fat suit. They made her extra frumpy on purpose.
No, I'm not talking about the actress. I'm saying, like, was it because Peggy was pregnant? She had a baby.
Well, I know, but she got pregnant with Pete Campbell's baby, and she was frumpy before she slept with Pete.
Right. I'm not talking about her frumpiness. I'm saying when they had her in the fat suit. I'm saying, was that because the character of Peggy was pregnant, or was that because the character of Peggy was just, you know, like, really overweight?
I think she was just overweight.
Okay, because they went through that period where they were like, it was like that episode of Battlestar where, like, Lee Adama was suddenly all porked up. You know, and Bill Adama's going, look at you, you're huge, or whatever it was he said. But there was, I think it was in the second season, where it was the episode where they were doing the vocal recording in the booth.
Yeah.
And they were sitting there with the client, and the girl was in the vocal booth trying to do the recording session. And they kept cutting to Peggy, to Elizabeth Moss, is that the actress's name? And she was, it's like they just made her, like, almost... Like, it wasn't that she was comically huge. It was like it came out of nowhere. Mm. It was like previously a Mad Men, skinny Peggy. Now, fat Peggy. And I looking back at it now, I can't remember if that's because that coincided with the character being pregnant or if they were just doing that as like its own story arc.
I don't know.
But they really have evolved the way that she looks and the way that she dresses. And it's notable that she is evolving and she looks different and yet Joan doesn't. And that's a very telling thing. And, you know, and of course, many of the other female characters actually stay exactly the same.
Yeah.
Betty Draper stays exactly the same, even though she's divorced and has a new husband.
But with the secretary, they did kind of the same thing. She's wearing a looser, more casual dress style, and her hair was down.
With Draper's secretary?
Yeah, Draper's secretary, because she was sort of a Joan before. And now, all of a sudden, she's more of a much more glamorous Peggy.
I have to say this. I was making notes to myself last night as Mad Men was playing. And I wrote down, this is the one, this isn't my only observation, but this is the one thing that I wrote about that hookup between Don and his secretary that happened toward the end of the episode. There are a couple great moments in last night's show. I mean, in a show that is great from front to back, there are a couple standout points. First of all, however much Roger Sterling just continues to implode as a human being, the guy always has the best lines on the show. They were mentioning that ad guy at the other agency who had died. And somebody said, well, what about the dead ad guy? And Roger Sterling says, well, you know, Dave, what's his name, died? Well, there's your silver lining, which is awesome. It's just the sort of thing that Roger Sterling says better than anybody. There was the moment when the creepy guy, whose name I can never remember, he's the copywriter that is always giving Peggy such a hard time.
Oh yeah,
and where they went to the hotel and they stripped, and he's just a lech, and he was the guy who was like reading the Playboy magazine or whatever, and the thing where he basically just has her shut her eyes so he can try to grope her, and then when she's offended, he just says, "I was just trying to help." I won't say it's the best moment, but the moment that I actually went back and watched two or three times last night, because it was like a blink and you'll miss it kind of a thing, was at the 43-minute, 45-second mark. And it was after Don Draper has hooked up with his secretary, and as they were doing it, and of course, I'm watching the show last night, and it's like the weirdest combination of circumstances because I'm ironing. So I'm busy there, like, you know, sitting there just ironing away, feeling, you know, like a 1950s housewife, just starching and ironing and folding and pressing and watching my stories. And then Don and his secretary are working late, and his secretary, Megan, says, well, you know, like, well, show me what you do. I want to know more about you or whatever. And I'm thinking, oh, no, this is going to end badly. Don't F her, because it's going to go. And then they start to kiss, and I'm just thinking, Don, what are you doing? What's happening? Anyway, so they get it on, and then afterwards, she's getting dressed. And there is this thing that I really can't even describe it. You have to watch it. She's buttoning up her shirt, and they actually kiss. And he kisses her, and then he turns away to continue getting dressed. And she gives this look, and it's not to anybody in particular, because he has already turned away. She gives this look that is just, I don't know if it was a little thing she did or if they directed her to do it. But it is just one of the most telling looks I have. I don't even want to say it's like a sexual look, although it's like a post-sexual look. It is this sort of look of satiation and of a having gotten what she wanted that is, it's really subtle and it's really well done, but it's like the hottest thing I have ever seen in my life. And Seamus actually sent me an email in which he alluded to that, and he just said, by the way, best secretary ever. And the other great thing about that secretary and the way she interacts with Don is that as much as I was expecting them to sleep together and then they did, in a way I was glad to see that they sort of subverted my expectations by not making her, another clingy sort of wreck of a secretary like the last girl he effed, that ran off and was a crying wreck.
Isn't this the same woman?
No, it's a different girl. No, this girl's name is Megan. The last girl was her name was Annette something or other.
Oh, I thought this was
Allison.
The same one. Okay, then never mind then.
No, the last.
Because I was saying that thing about the.
I wondered what you were referring to.
All right.
No, the last secretary was Allison. This girl is Megan. It's a different girl altogether, but this girl obviously knows. He effed the last girl, and the last girl immediately became, you know, whatever. Had some sort of an adverse reaction to that.
Yeah.
So that this secretary, she actually behaved in a way that I didn't expect, where she actually just said, she goes, I'm not going to cry, I'm not going to run away. And she was very sort of, she was a combination of sexual and nurturing, because she said, I want you to go home, I want you to sleep, I don't want you to drink too much. And this after just, like, boning him on the couch. And it sounds weird to say, but it's almost like the perfect woman for Don Draper, because she's nurturing and slutty.
Well, yeah, and she's also, again, he's been going through this thing where he's had secretaries taking care of things for him. He's had the wife who took care of things for him at his home, so he didn't have to deal with it. But only through his relationship with what's-her-name, this other woman, has he had a chance to actually be with someone who he can talk to about his work. Who actually is interested in the most important thing about him, which is his work. And it's interesting because I really loved the whole dynamic between the two of them, other than the unfortunate fact that she's his secretary, but that she, you know, has aspirations to be more than just a secretary. And it didn't seem like she was really sleeping with him just to get somewhere. She actually seems smart and interested. And again, he's able to talk to her about his work. And this is a new thing. And it's almost like if a relationship, you know, occurs with this woman, it's a natural evolution of what's coming from his relationship with the blonde.
Well, she actually says, the secretary, Megan, says right before they have sex, she says something very similar to, don't worry, this isn't work. She's like, this is something separate. So she actually tells him straight out, like, this has, you know, there is our work relationship, and then there's this, and this is a totally separate thing. So it's interesting because she's actually the first hybrid of all of Don Draper's female characters.
Okay, I just looked at that look she gave. That
it's
you were
great.
Talking about. Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know how to describe it. But actually, I went back and I watched it a few times because it was so brief, but it was so powerful.
It's kind of a dreamy, hot, kind of almost Gina Gershon-y kind of a lips and hooded eyes sort of a thing.
Kind of a damn. But she is the first confluence of all of Don Draper's types. You know, to put into one woman. So I just found that fascinating. And then, you know, that whole kind of sad, pathetic story arc with Roger Sterling kind of falling apart and running off to Joan, you know, as, you know, to be comforted. And she actually says, am I a port in a storm? And he says, no. He's like, I feel like crap and you make me feel better. And she said, I'm not a solution. I'm just another problem. And she basically tells him, it's over, finally, for once and for all.
And he has that great line saying, so the night we got mugged was the last time. I wish I'd known that.
Right, right. It bugs me that we never had any resolution to whether he went to the Beatles concert or not. That's the sort of thing that I fixate on.
I think he did. I believe he did.
They may resolve it, but it's like, you know, I realized when I was looking on Facebook, our listener Jenny actually posted something after last week's episode that I had assumed that Joan had gone in to get the abortion, but Jenny pointed out that they never actually said that. They never actually pointed out that she did. You can't just assume. Now, she probably did. She went there to do it, but they left it on that line where the woman says to Joan, thinking Joan has brought her daughter, how old is your daughter? And Joan has that moment and she says 15, implying that it was 15 years ago she had the previous abortion, and then they cut from the scene and they never go back. And so it's actually unclear whether she followed through with that, especially given the fact that her husband is in Vietnam and is in some sort of mortal danger and she's feeling adrift in her life. It's entirely possible that Joan is going to have the baby.
It's possible, but I don't think so. I mean, there is that line where she says to Roger, we avoided a tragedy, which you could read in either of two ways.
You could read it in three ways. She could just be lying.
But, I took it to believe that she was using that that we solved the problem. We took care of it.
Yeah, and I like the show. I like the show for a lot of reasons, but chief among them is that it doesn't. They don't ever hand you everything all at once. Some of the conclusions you have to arrive at on your own, and some of the conclusions they don't ever give you, or they give them to you on a piecemeal basis. Anyway, so it was great. I don't know where they go after this season, because they've done the thing of taking them out of their comfort zone by having them establish an entirely new agency, and having done that, the agency itself is in peril, and I don't know what they would possibly endanger on the program now that they've endangered home life, personal relationships, the existing agency, and the brand new agency. I mean, the show, basically every season, something has been in peril, and I don't know what's left.
But, yeah, because there is going to be one more season, and then they're ending it, I believe, right?
I don't know. I haven't heard that. Anyway, I would hope that that would be the case, but I don't think
I might be wrong about that, but I thought I'd heard that. But maybe I'm just making that up in my own head. It seems to me, honestly, if they're going to, like, actually close out the series after another season or so, that it seems to me the logical storytelling conclusion would be to have Don leave advertising. And just leave behind Don Draper.
Right.
And go back to being, and become Dick Whitman for the first time and do something else with his life. Because there was a scene with, again, the blonde whose name I can't. No, actually, yeah, it was the blonde who said, you're the most hireable man on Madison Avenue.
Right.
And he just got this pained look on his face that there's absolutely no way he wants to go work for another agency, that he wants to work for someone else ever again. So if the agency fails, you know, who is he? What's going to happen to his identity entirely? And his whole story is about identity to begin with. His identity as an advertising man, his identity as a husband, his identity as Don Draper, which is, you know, a costume he's wearing.
Well, and he said last week, actually, when it looked like he was going to be exposed, he said he was just sick of the whole thing. He said, you know, he was sick of everything and sick of all of it, implying not just, you know, the running and the hiding, but, you know, kind of his whole, yeah. you know, his whole life. That's a sort of existentialist point of view that he'll, the series will end with him actually becoming himself.
Yeah.
Sort of lucky
in
view on the
entire
thing. The
only way you
thing.
Could really close the series out would be for him to walk away from advertising and to embrace his true identity.
There was that episode, I think, in the second season where he runs off. He's in California with Pete, but he runs off and spends the whole day with the weird continental like jet set.
Yes.
You know, sort of like, well, like the Manson family with money, kind of living in that mansion. And that was a little indication that he is always kind of prepared, to just pull the ripcord and just, you know, run into a new life.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. So this Mad Men, if you're not watching that, you really ought to be. It is a fantastic program. So.
Well, you really ought to go back to the beginning and watch it on DVD to get the story from the beginning.
The other thing you ought to be watching is Eastbound and Down, which I have to tell you, and we've discussed the fact that we didn't watch Dexter last night, either of us, and I'll watch it this afternoon probably, but for me, it was just that I had a finite amount of hours left before I had to go to bed, and there's a lot of stuff to watch, and so I thought, you know, I'll watch Mad Men, then I'll watch Eastbound and Down, and if I have time, I'll get to Dexter. And then I had this plan, which never works out, which is that I'll watch it in the morning, and then that's just, you know, I'm never able to get that done. I have learned in the past that if I put things off to the morning, they will not be finished. So I was just sort of, I was abdicating any sort of responsibility to watch Dexter. But Eastbound and Down, I have to tell you, that sequence, when he comes home and Kenny comes home and Steve, who is in fact the guy he stole the identity, and the last name is what was kind of throwing me off there, comes in and Stevie is in his house and he shoots him in the leg. I about pissed myself.
I so rarely just actually laugh out loud at things when I'm by myself. Just lose it.
Yeah.
Laughing at it. And I was sitting here actually in the studio watching Eastbound and Down this morning. And that scene, yeah, I just started guffawing with laughter and just I laughed all by myself sitting here in this room for about 5 minutes.
Actually had to stop. I had to pause the show. When he shoots Steve in the leg and then shoves him into the bathtub and then is pouring in a variety of alcohols onto his wound and then I'm sorry, it's margarita mix. And then he's turning on the water and he's just screaming at him and it was just I actually
don't go into shock. Don't go into shock.
Live. And very rarely do I actually have to stop something because it's hard to get me to laugh out loud at a television show or movie. But I had to just pause it and just sort of compose myself. And then I had to do it again like 2 minutes later when the guy's walking around the apartment. And he's looking and there's like a toilet overflowing with, you know, crap. And then there's like syringes and then there's just garbage piled up. And then he opens the refrigerator and there's nothing except a huge snake like squirming around.
Actually, it was a second before that got me is when he goes into the bathroom and he lifts up the lid to the toilet and there's like a doll in the toilet.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what that was.
I mean, it was overflowing with muck and then there was like some sort of object.
Like a stuffed animal or a toy for no good reason in the toilet. And he just closes the lid and then keeps walking around and looking at things.
God, it was amazing. So Seamus, in his email where he said about Mad Men, best secretary ever, he then sent me one about Eastbound and Down and he said, best entrance ever.
Oh, God.
When he enters when he runs onto the field and he's now playing for the Charros, is that the name of
Something
it?
Something like that.
But it's the you know, this Mexican baseball league. Where the guy said, I want to join you on your many Hispanic adventures. When he runs on to the I'm a Real American song, which, by the way, was issued on Hulk Hogan's LP back. That's where that's from. And I own that entire record. I very nearly started the show with that song today, with the I'm a Real American.
Should've.
That's Hulk Hogan and Rick Derringer of rock and roll hoochie coo fame. When he runs onto the field, and the great thing about that moment when he runs on, and this is one of the genius things about Eastbound and Down, is again, they go the opposite. They do the opposite of what you expect, and they go a way that that no other show would go. Because you figure Kenny Powers, he's a joke, and he's a failure, and he's a has-been, and he's washed up. And so he plans this huge, massive, as he describes it, a pageant like you'd see at an Alabama concert or something, with fireworks and explosions and music and what all. And he wants to run onto the field with this massive, over-the-top fanfare. And any other sitcom, any other show would have him run into the field, and it would be really underwhelming. There would be like a single sparkler. And they know that that's what most other shows would do. So they actually go entirely the opposite way, where they have his entrance be utterly and totally over the top and spectacular. But then it's the game itself.
Well, then there's like 15 people in the stands.
And they and they give them the big suspense about whether he'll be able to, you know, still have his pitch back and whether he'll be able to strike the guy out. And again, I was thinking, oh, this is where he chokes.
Yeah.
And he doesn't choke. It's that he throws the perfect three strikes and no one cares.
Yeah.
And that's not at all what I was expecting. And I love it when television shows can surprise me like that. I've never seen Danny McBride interviewed out of character. And I didn't see Land of the Lost. So it's like I have very little knowledge of it's like who he is or what he's like in real life. But I got to tell you, that guy just vanishes into Kenny Powers.
He plays essentially a version of that same character in Land of the Lost, but he is just so good at, again, that's another Will Ferrell, you know, Adam McKay movie.
Right.
So there's obviously a lot of ad-libbing going on, and he's just so very, very good at creating dialogue and having these brilliant little scenes as that guy that Land of the Lost is also really underrated, really, really hilarious.
I avoided it because the whole idea kind of put a bad taste in my mouth. And then I heard.
And it got crappy reviews.
Early
it really
poor. And from people whose opinions I kind of respect, they were just like, it's, you know, they said it's pointless. And
comedy is really subjective, though. It's really, you know, it's really hard because so often I've told people that I found something completely hilarious and it just leaves them cold and vice versa. It's very, very hard to recommend comedy to other people.
I actually, speaking of that, I was actually showing Laura, because she asked me, she's like, what are you watching? I said, oh, Eastbound and Down. And she said, oh, yeah, I've never seen that. She has some friends who watch it, though. And I said, well, I don't think it's for you, baby. I don't think you'd really like it. And she said, what do you mean? I said, well, it's, you know, it's the Observer. And she liked Observer and Report, but she said also that she didn't really know that she would want to see it again because it was so troubling. And so I just showed her the beginning of last week where it's just him at the cockfight. And it's just, you know, fat, greasy, mulleted American holding fistfuls of, you know, of pesos while watching a cockfight. And I said, that's pretty much the character. I said, if you don't, you know, if this tells you everything you need to know about Kenny Powers. And she said, yeah, I don't want to watch that. They did the other thing they did last night, and it's the Jody Hill trademark of the cinematic entrance to the game. And then that great ending where he's talking to Stevie, who's like, I would do anything to stay in Mexico, looking like a retarded Ed Norton.
Yeah.
You know, Seamus actually goes, is that Ed Norton like undercover as that guy? But he's like, if Ed Norton had like a mongoloid puffy brother, he said, I will do anything to stay in Mexico with you, Kenny. And Kenny shakes his hand and does that horrible, like, that big, dumb, like, welcome to the resistance, you know, Stevie. And then the music has been building, and then they just do that big full screen, like, directed by Jody Hill.
Yes.
And it actually, it's a testament to that guy's directing ability that even the credits are exciting. And it's nothing but just words on the screen. So well done, Jody Hill. It's awesome. That is another show where if you're not watching it, you really got to go back and watch it from the beginning. You really do owe it to yourself. Yeah. It's exceptional.
It is.
It really is. Speaking of exceptional, well, we want to take a moment to talk about Mr. Michael Beatty. He is the owner and operator of The Cleaning Solution. And we mentioned them earlier this hour. We've talked about them a lot. And the reason we've done that is they're one of our fine business partners. But also we've talked about them more than anybody else because they were the first business to advertise with us. Michael Beatty was the first sponsor of this iteration of the Rick Emerson radio program. And he came on board from the very beginning. I mean, right out of the gate. He said that he wanted to. It was an odd noise.
Sorry. This label on the mic stand has been like slowly peeling off around the edges for weeks, and I finally got tired of feeling it, you know, and I tore it off while you were talking. I didn't intend to interrupt your flow.
It's okay. I was just wondering what that sound was. It's actually attached to a microphone. Ah, never mind. In any event, The Cleaning Solution has been a proud sponsor of this iteration of the Rick Emerson Show, sincerely, the very beginning. And actually, we had him on the show, I think, a week or two after we started, and he talked about the first time that he had gone to a Lycus event, which I think was the last time he went to a Lycus event, because then it all went poorly. It involved his father and some taunting and some you had a dump your girlfriend and some non-dumping of the girlfriend, and then Sarah bought him booze and everything was fine and all was forgiven and forgotten. So if you want to support this program, you want to support the Emerson News Network, and if you need something in your home cleaned, something on your floor, whether it's your carpet, your tile, your upholstery, your entryway, your walkway, whether the flagstones, whether it's actually the mortar between and the caulking between the tiles, whether it's damage to your rug or your carpet from just normal wear and tear or spill or pets, you can contact Mr. Michael Beatty and he will take care of you. 971-533-3211 is how you contact him. 971-533-3211. And please do tell him you heard it right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. The cleaning solution can be reached at 971-533-3211. At the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A search of a 25-year-old man in Manatee, Florida, following a traffic stop on Wednesday morning.
Where is that?
Florida.
That's right.
Revealed one bag of marijuana and one bag of cocaine in the driver's buttocks, according to the Manatee County Sheriff's Office. The driver said only the marijuana belonged to him. Raymond Stanley Roberts was pulled over at 8:40 a.m., approaching the Hyundai. Deputies said they could smell a strong odor of marijuana coming from the vehicle. After writing a speeding ticket, one of the deputies asked Roberts if he smoked marijuana and when he had done it last. According to the arrest report, Roberts replied he smoked the night before and there was nothing in the car. He then told the deputies to go ahead and search the car. While searching Roberts' person, deputies felt a soft object in his buttocks.
Wait a minute. So when you say he had a bag of marijuana and a bag of cocaine in his buttocks.
I believe it was between his buttocks.
But the syntax there is sort of unclear.
Yeah.
Did he have one that was just sitting on, like, I don't know, sitting one was in his ass and one was elsewhere, or were they both? Is it that they saw the marijuana on the seat, but then they found more in a bag in his ass?
Well, they were patting him down and they felt a soft object. The report said Roberts then said, "Let me get it." And he pulled out a clear plastic bag of marijuana weighing 4.5 grams. He was then asked if he was holding anything else, and Roberts said no. Deputies then felt another soft object in the same area and pulled it out through the exterior of Robert's shorts. The object was a bag with 27 pieces of rock cocaine weighing 3.5 grams. When the bag fell to the ground, Roberts immediately said, "The white stuff's not mine, but the weed is."
So this wasn't it was just sort of in his pants then. It was just like it was almost as if he'd stuffed it, because you wouldn't feel it in a pat down.
I don't know. They keep saying it was in his buttocks. So maybe it was stuck down the back of his pants, but it keeps, I don't know.
Unless he's a very large man, there's not a lot of, it's not a coin purse. I mean, there's not a lot of room. Really, I mean, unless one goes internal, there's not a lot of room there, I don't think. Unless his ass is designed differently from most human asses.
I don't know. He also stated that his friend had borrowed his vehicle before, and he saw the cocaine on the passenger seat when he was pulled over. So the implication being that then the cocaine somehow magically got into, like, the butt area of his pants on its own.
Well, so this is like maybe he was being pulled over and just said, "I know, I'll stick it in my pants. They'll never look there."
Right.
And then that would actually explain it, because then if you're just shoving it on the back of your pants, that is almost certainly, because then you're basically, then it's like you have a miniature diaper that they can sort of feel on the outside. And cops are finally attuned to that sort of thing, I would imagine.
So anyway, he was charged with possession of rock cocaine and marijuana. There's a photograph of him available. And it's interesting because he looks kind of like a cross between Michael on Lost and the grown-up Theo Huxtable.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does indeed. God, it really is just a great and terrible day for visual aids here. So that's at rickemerson.com/pictures. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our Geek Watch.
Here's your Geek Watch for Monday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show, that's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen, on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Here's Don Taylor with your Geek Watch.
Last week, winners of the Ig Nobel Prizes for humorous but thought-provoking research were honored in a ceremony at Harvard. Winners included the inventors of a remote control helicopter whale snot collector and researchers documenting bat fellatio. There's a full list of the winners below on my page here. Ceremony was headlined by Annals of Improbable Research publisher Mark Abrahams and features special guests like Neil Gaiman, as well as five actual Nobel Prize winners. The Engineering Prize Went to a couple of folks, one in London, one in Mexico, for perfecting a method to collect whale snot using a remote control helicopter. The medicine prize went to a fellow, two guys from the Netherlands, for discovering that symptoms of asthma can be treated with a roller coaster ride. The transportation planning prize went to several researchers in Japan and one in the UK for using slime mold to determine the optimal routes for railroad tracks. Excuse me. The physics prize went to researchers in New Zealand, who demonstrated that on icy footpaths in wintertime, people slip and fall less often if they wear socks on the outsides of their shoes.
This is a lot of information, yet it's frustratingly sparse where it needs to be more detailed. For example, here's what I want to know. If you're collecting snot from a whale, why would you need a helicopter and not, say, like a submarine?
Well, the report itself is actually titled A Novel Non-Invasive Tool for Disease Surveillance of Free-Ranging Whales and Its Relevance to Conservation Programs. So you would probably have to go get the study itself, the paper, and read it.
This is like when they have some really tantalizing description of something and then they opt not to show it. You can't describe how you're gathering whale snot with a helicopter and then not give any sort of demonstrations of how it works. That's not fair pool. That's just wrong, Don.
The Peace Prize went to researchers in the UK for confirming the widely held belief that swearing relieves pain. The Public Health Prize went to researchers who determined that by experiment that microbes cling to bearded scientists. That one was titled Microbiological Laboratory Hazard of Bearded Men.
That was just a guy who shares a lab with somebody he doesn't like and wants to prove that he's filthy. Yeah. That's really what that was. That was just they might have called it microbes cling to Chet over at the next workstation, who always leaves his Pyrex containers out.
The chemistry prize went to researchers from MIT, A&M, and the University of Hawaii, and British Petroleum for disproving the old belief that oil and water don't mix.
Yeah, no. All right.
There's two more. The management prize went to researchers who demonstrated mathematically that organizations would become more efficient if they promoted people at random. That was titled The Peter Principle Revisited, a Computational Study. And the biology prize went to researchers in China for scientifically documenting fellatio in fruit bats.
Okay. Well, there you go. There's your Who Says Science Isn't Fun? There's your Geek Watch.
By the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
Excellent. Here is Don Taylor.
Beginning October 1st, Colorado will begin collecting DNA from anyone arrested for a felony and sending it to a state database. The so-called Cady's Law, named for a New Mexico murder victim, takes full effect more than a year after it became law. Law enforcement and prosecutors say this new law puts Colorado on the cutting edge of using the latest DNA technology to solve crimes. The law is designed to help connect those arrested on a felony to other crimes they may have committed, but opponents call it an assault on the Fourth Amendment. The Colorado Bureau of Investigation right now has 5,700 unknown DNA profiles on a database from crime scenes processed in its DNA lab. Most of these crimes, they say, are committed by serial criminals. Denver has nearly 200 cases, which might be better solved using the new law. The ACLU, however, calls taking DNA samples an illegal search. This kind of search of innocent persons to see if they might have some connection with a crime not connected to the crime for which they're arrested violates our Constitution. It violates the right of privacy.
Wait a minute. So this is when the ACLU says the search of innocent persons, I'm unclear what they mean by that, because these are convicted felons, right?
Yes, but
they're just innocent of other crimes. To the best
so
of our
far,
knowledge.
Yeah. So far, basically, our system is such is you're not supposed to collect DNA samples from someone unless you have, you know, a reason, unless you have a specific crime that you are trying to connect them to. If you collect DNA samples from people whenever they connect a felony and then put it into a vast database on the chance to fish around and find other things that they connect them to. And again, I think this is one of those supposedly slippery slope things where you don't want to just start It's another chipping away of basically of civil rights.
Well, I suppose, unless you've ever heard of fingerprints, in which case we've been keeping a database on convicted, not just felons, but convicted criminals of all varieties for like ever. Also, that's I mean, not like I'm a lawyer or something, but I mean, that whole thing about like it's like when people are constantly screaming that something violates the First Amendment because like it affects them. The Fourth Amendment actually just protects, your personal property and papers against unreasonable search and seizure. And unreasonable search and seizure is generally held to mean, like, if there is no reason to believe that you would be guilty of anything. And by definition, if you're a convicted felon, you are statistically more likely to be guilty of, like, any crime on earth than, you know, you.
Yeah.
So that's not unreasonable. It just seems like there's an actual basis for that.
Yeah.
This is the thing about, because I was like, as George H.W. Bush actually would have said, I was a card-carrying member of the ACLU for a long time. And then what finally actually, I just let it lapse because they just kept nagging me about things. It's like the ACLU is sort of like MoveOn.org and like the NRA in that every single day the Constitution is hanging by a thread. And then it's like, and then it's like you would open up the letter, and it was really just like they needed another $12 from me for something.
Now it's email abuse, basically. It's like Move On and a couple of these things. Yet once you get on their mailing list, once you get involved with them, it's like every single day.
The gravest threat to liberty, Dawn.
I have some naggy email telling me about something that I'm supposed to be alarmed about, and it's like.
Yeah, no,
I just don't have that much alarm in me anymore, frankly.
About like, I don't know, like 9 years ago or something, I went to see, there was that that Abbie Hoffman movie that came out that had Vincent D'Onofrio and Janine Garofalo in it.
Yeah, Burn This Movie.
Was it Burn, was Steal This Movie?
Steal This Movie.
So I saw Steal This Movie, and it was, but it, you know, I'm a big Abbie Hoffman fan, and so I wanted to see that, and I didn't want to wait for it to come out in theaters, so I went to a special advanced screening of it that Planned Parenthood was sponsoring. And so as a result, like, I'm just on some Planned Parenthood list, like, for life. And I don't think a day has gone by that I haven't gotten, like, an email or an actual, like, snail mail from Planned Parenthood. And it's always got some huge, like, an exclamation mark on the front of it. And, and it just says, women's freedom being threatened like never before, except for yesterday, and what you'll receive tomorrow. It's never, if I could just magically go back in time and abort myself so that I did not go to that theater and give them my name and my mailing address and my whatever. Anyway, so just beware of your quest for social justice, because it'll put you on a mailing list like for all time and eternity. All right, let's do one more here.
Let's do the Clown Watch.
Here's your Clown Watch for Monday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. This is Don Taylor with your Clown Watch.
Francisco Everardo Oliveira Silva, better known by his clown name Tira Rica, received more than 1.3 million votes in Sao Paulo in Brazil's presidential and congressional elections, more than double the votes of the second-placed candidate. Tira Rica caught the attention of disillusioned voters by asking for their support with the humorous slogan, "It can't get any worse," and a promise to do nothing more in Congress than report back to them on how politicians spend their time.
So he received what percent?
More than double the votes of the next most popular
candidate.
That's
fantastic. Well done.
As his campaign advertisements, as we reported earlier, said, "What does a congressman do? The truth is, I don't know, but vote for me and I'll tell you." The clown, whose stage name means grumpy, usually appears in public wearing a blonde wig, a red hat, and a garish outfit. He survived a last-minute attempt by public prosecutors to bar him from running because of evidence he's illiterate. His candidacy may not have been as spontaneous or as innocent as it may appear, however. Tira Rica's well-financed campaign will help elect other politicians because under Brazil's election rules, he can pass his substantial excess votes onto other candidates in his coalition, which includes the ruling Workers' Party.
So he could just have other, like, clown cronies just surround him.
He could just be, like, a front for a bunch of guys who want him to, like, you know, yay, people love him because he's a clown. Give us your votes, and then they're evil.
He really has the capacity. It is within his grasp to be the most evil clown in all of human history.
That's true.
That's really something to aspire to. Excellent. Well done.
He is grumpy.
That's your Clown Watch for Monday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. All right, there you go. By the way, this is sort of just apropos of nothing. I read a... an email from Seamus earlier about Mad Men. I should actually give the tag to this, which is a follow-up to something he told us last week. Seamus actually revealed last week, if you see his avatar on Xbox Live, his avatar is actually, if I can do this from memory now, is actually wearing a leather, how did you describe it? Wearing a tight-fitting, very revealing leather outfit and prancing around a unicorn. Oh, and wearing a gas mask. And so I said, you know, he must have access to some sort of, like, secret control panel in Xbox Live that I'm not privy to. And he said, P.S., Rick, I'm ashamed to admit it, but while the Avatar gas mask was free, I did pay a total of $6 for the unicorn and the leather Lara Croft outfit. Signed, Seamus. So there you go. So behold technology and its ability to make you gay in entirely new ways. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. You mentioned, I think it was last week, we were talking about something happened in the studio, and you were joking about Joe Squires coming to fix it because he was on the nuclear sub where they trained to put out like a steam leak with a mattress and a wad of bubble gum or something. I think probably later this week he's actually going to sit in for part of the show. He asked me, he's like, I've always wanted to see one of them radio programs happen. Could I, you know, how about if I just like, sort of lurk in the background and watch you guys do it? So we're going to have him on the show later on. And maybe Thursday or something, just because he sort of wanted to see the show happen. He doesn't really know this, but we're going to have him on to talk about, you know, life on a nuclear submarine where he was a plumbing engineer and an electrical engineer, and, like a guy who had to put out, I swear to God, like radioactive steam leaks and everything. So that's going to be later on this week that we will find out the burning questions to how he handled that. Squires Electric is a brand new business partner and sponsor here at the Rick Emerson Radio Program. You can contact them at SquiresElectric.com. That is Squires Electric. com. You can also call them if you want. It's 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. And one of the things that you call Squires Electric for is because even if it's something that you actually could puzzle out yourself, you know, you're probably not like me, and you're not going to be sitting there with a wrench trying to figure out exactly why everything in your house suddenly quit whirring, you know, and turned dark. You might actually be able to fix it yourself. It's going to take a disproportionate amount of time, and it's going to be a hassle, and it's going to be a pain. And let's be honest, unless you're an electrical engineer, and you're probably not, there's no guarantee that it was actually done correctly, which means you might have to go back and do it again next week or the month after that. You call a guy who knows what he's doing. You call a company that's been doing this for 12 years, that is Squires Electric, and it's going to be done right, and it's going to be done right the first time. And as they said to me, they said, they'll fix it that night, and if they can't fix it that night, they'll get it working that night, and they'll fix it the next day. They'll get it fixed as soon as possible, and it's going to be fixed in a way that doesn't require it to be adjusted or looked at or fixed or repaired again sometime in the immediate future. You can find out more about them at 503-252-1609. They have free estimates. There's no job too small, no job too large. Squires Electric is the website, squireselectric.com. 503-252-1609. A proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Show. Please tell them you heard it here. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, it can make your life easier. Squires Electric and squireselectric.com. Let's do one more here with Dawn Taylor before we wrap it up. Don't forget to join us later on in the week. We'll be joined by Ms. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. And on Thursday, we'll talk to author Bill Carter. This is Dawn Taylor.
A police officer in Florida says a grandmother tried to avoid a drunken driving arrest by offering to make him a grilled cheese sandwich. This was a police officer in Florida.
Yeah, I was just back on the... this is a drunken driver.
Right.
Was she offering to make him a grilled cheese sandwich? Like, is that what the kids are calling it now? Is that code for something else?
Elsie Wright Cotter, 65, it tried the ploy, but it did not work. She was arrested Thursday night and charged with driving under the influence. In his report, Marion County Deputy Calvin Batts said he responded to a call about an erratic driver and pulled O'Connor over. He said he smelled alcohol in her breath and found two Sky vodka bottles in her Cadillac Sport utility vehicle, one empty and one half full. O'Connor failed the field sobriety test. At the county jail, her blood alcohol level tested at more than three times the legal limit. Come on now, I'm a grandma, she said. Can't you do anything for me because I'm not that bad? I could have brought you back to my house and made you a grilled cheese sandwich.
Well, it doesn't really sound like it was actually an offer to do it. She was just listing a series of things that she could have done instead of actually having to... So this isn't like when... What was that story? I think it was like in Kentucky or something where there was like a full-on porn star that got pulled over not too long ago. And she and the cop apparently worked something out by the side of the road. She offered to just pay that fine right there. which all I think would have ended well, except that the cop actually decided to film it using that like dashboard cam thing. Like he sort of like on it's like Velcroed to the dashboard of the cop car, and he's like, wait, I better film this for posterity on this camera that like feeds everything, you know, back at the central headquarters. So don't do that, kids.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, and, of course, our chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. Don't forget to send your Geek-O-Lantern carvings, that is your pumpkin carving in a geek style, to contest at rickemerson.com. You got until midnight on October 25th to do that. That is contest at rickemerson.com. After a brief musical interlude, we will have another exciting encore of Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. Thank you for listening. It is Monday, October 4th, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Thanks for listening. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.